It's so easy to look at someone else, whether it's a professional runner, whether it's someone lining up next to you in the middle of the pack at your next start line, and think that they have it all, to think that they don't struggle. And that's never the case.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who really wishes people would recycle more, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 58 of the Running for Real podcast. I am really happy that you are here. Thank you so much for joining me. If you are a fan of my guest today, welcome if this is your first time. And I'm really excited to chat with her today. But before we get to that, last week you heard from Trent Stellingworth. We talked all about performance nutrition. Trent is one of the top experts in his field, working with Olympians to perfect their nutrition. He's also worked with many of the major running nutrition brands. Some of you may actually take some of the products that he has worked on. If you missed that one, be sure to go back and check it out. So today I have another podcast host on the show, one who is bubbly, fun, and real. She's known for asking all the questions we want to hear on her podcast. And if you love to hear from the professional runners and other people who are very high in their career, she gets the best runners in the world, many of which I can't even get to respond to my emails, but she gets them on her show. Today, we're going to talk to Ali Fella about Crohn's disease. I had no idea how intense and debilitating it can be before this episode, so it might be eye-opening for you too. And Ali recently actually announced that she is pregnant, which is really exciting. I did not know that when we were recording this episode, so we did not chat about that, but I am really happy for Ali and her husband. So before I get to that, last month I was telling you about the Running for Real podcast series. You know, the ones I worked so hard to get finished before my maternity leave, but then my daughter arrived over 3 weeks early, so I never got the chance to tell you about them. I've taken the past month to share with you about them, and today I'm going to tell you about quite possibly the best one. Am I allowed to say that? I think so. I have 6 series: beginners, coming back from injury, marathon, nutrition, pregnancy and postpartum, and mental training. Each series contains 5 to 7 episodes of direct-to-the-point interviews with some of the best experts in the world, along with a specific guide with advice from those guests to you on that particular topic. I worked really hard on these, and I'm so proud of them. They're unlike anything else out there, and those who have got them so far have absolutely loved them. So today I'm telling you about the Coming Back from Injury series. You know, the one that no one really wants to need, but let's be real, as runners, sometimes we do get injured and we do need this. So this one is the most unique, and honestly, I can't believe that there isn't something else like this out there, but there isn't. I rounded up the absolute best experts I could think of, including Jay DeSherry, James Dunn, and Brad Beer, just to name a few. I asked them the questions we all really want to know, and especially when it comes to the mental side of injuries, you know, the questions that are never really addressed. So some of the things we talked about include: how do I avoid losing fitness when I'm injured? How do I handle it when everyone around me is racing? How do I know if the pain I feel is injury paranoia or actual pain? How do I handle post-injury depression? And what is the best running form for preventing injury? There's a whole lot more, and each episode is focused on a specific part of being injured and coming back. There's also a lot on the mental side, as that's neglected everywhere else. And do you want to know a secret? This one is my favorite series. I think it's so unlike everything else. I wish I had this when I was injured, and it really will make you feel so much better about your situation. You can find out more in the show notes at tinamuir.com/episode58 or by visiting tinamuir.com/injury-series. So that's enough from me. After a quick word from Body Health, we will be right to the episode with Ali. Have you tried Body Health Perfect Amino yet? They were a vital part in making sure I recovered during my heavy training as an elite runner. And guess what? Now I'm back to running, so are they back in my cycle. So I am really excited to have them back. You can find out how you can get 10% off and just what they can do for you later in the show. Ali, I am so excited to have a fellow podcast host on the line and also just to talk to you in general. You and I have known each other for a few years now, but I want the audience to hear how great you are. So thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on this side of the screen and of the microphone and to not be the one asking the questions today.
I know, it's kind of fun actually to be interviewed. Although I was watching a video the other day of Ellen DeGeneres being interviewed. I think it was actually by Channing Tatum as a guest host. As a new mother, I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos just randomly. But anyway, Ellen was like terrible at being interviewed. Not like terrible to, you know, obviously she's great, but every time she kept saying, so what do you think about da da da? And it was like, no, you're supposed to be answering the questions. So hopefully you're going to be able to answer the questions here. But okay, so, you know, you're known for your very popular podcast, Ali on the Run, the Ali on the Run show, I should say, and your Ali on the Run blog. But, you know, you kind of set up your blog, your business, your name, you know, quite a while ago now in the early blogging days. So to get you off on a, I guess, icebreaker question, just to make you think for a second, if you could go back now, knowing, you know, all that you know, how much a name matters, how, you know, it, people have come up with all kinds of things, would you have changed the name of your blog, podcast, website in any way?
No, I love it. You do? I love being Ali on the Run. You yeah, do. I think it's fun. I would have taken better photos. I would have resized my photos so that I didn't crash my blog every 6 months and have to figure out why. So I would do a lot differently on that end. But no, I would keep the name Ali on the Run.
It is a good one and very memorable as well. But I just you know, my original, I don't think many people know this, my original blog name was called Insatiable Sweet Tooth.
Really? That's like a lot. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, and you can imagine people trying to spell that. Half the people would probably spell it wrong. But anyway, that was the original. I'm glad I didn't stick with that.
I love it.
So going along this journey, you know, at the time when it started to get big, were you kind of surprised before, you know, now we know that people love following others' journeys and we love following people on social media, but were you surprised at the time that people were interested in, you know, just your everyday running journey?
Yes and no. I never, even to this day, I never considered my blog to be big. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because it was always a hobby. It was never my job. Mm-hmm. It was just something I did for fun. I would literally write my posts in the morning on the notes app in my phone on the subway. I would get to work because I would go to work really early and I would use that first half hour to email the note to myself, upload it to WordPress and post it. Like it was just about my day. It was just a fun thing. And even, I mean, I remember in the heyday of blogging, I would get over 100 comments on a post and that I'm like, that's so much, but there were other running blogs getting 300 mm-hmm. at the time. So mm-hmm. I never felt like mine was that big, but I always loved that. That to me was the best part. Like writing was fun. That was cool. But the community and hearing from people and forming these relationships with people who live halfway around the world mm-hmm. and are reading is so cool. And I know that for me, I was writing about running and my crazy workouts for a couple months. It wasn't until I wrote about going through a breakup that my blog blew up a little bit. Like I went from getting, you know, maybe like 20 or 40 comments on a post to getting hundreds because all of a sudden I wasn't a runner. I was a human. Mm-hmm. And so that was interesting to me that, you know, people it's the human interest stuff. It's the personal stuff. And then ever since then, that's kind of where it spiraled and took off a little bit was writing about getting dumped.
Yep.
Like that. So yay.
Yeah. People always like, you get a lot of people come out of the woodwork and say that they've been reading when you do share something that maybe isn't as good as it, as the other stuff. And well done to you for being real and kind of sharing. We're all about that here with this podcast. And I'd love for you to share just a little bit about your running journey. You know, you were a dancer initially, but, tell us about how you first took up running.
Yeah, I feel like I need to stop saying I was a dancer because I've been saying that for so long that I worry that people expect I'm going to have skills still. And if I put on tap shoes, I can bust out some time steps and some cool tricks in the tap shoes, but like send me to a club. Well, first of all, I don't stay up late enough to go to clubs. I wouldn't even know where to go now, but like I can't dance. Like I go to weddings and I'm just like a dweeb. But that being said, yes, I was a dancer growing up. I was all about, you know, choreography, tap, jazz, ballet. I was competitive. Mm-hmm. And running was that thing that you had to do if you were late for gym class. Running wasn't a thing you chose to do. It was a punishment. It was something that's when all of a sudden, oh, I have to go to the bathroom when everyone was running laps. Like, that was my escape. But then I graduated from college. I moved to New York City. I had no plans to keep dancing after college. I wanted to write about dancing, which is what I was doing, but I didn't want to go pro. That wasn't the plan. I probably wasn't good enough, but I moved to the city, started working in the publishing industry, and started eating pizza at 4 a.m. every night after going out drinking. And all of a sudden I realized, wow, all the clothes I moved here with don't fit anymore. Maybe I should be kind of active. And my roommate, who I found on Craigslist, she had all these medals hanging on her wall. I'll always remember that was the first thing I noticed the day I moved in, was all her medals. And I was like, what are those? Are you an Olympian? And she was like, I run half marathons. And I was like, what does that mean? I was like, you choose to run? And like, she explained, I like didn't understand. I didn't know that races were a thing that everyday people did. I had no clue. But then the rest is history. Of course, she took me to get fitted for a pair of running shoes at the local running store. She introduced me to Central Park. She was there with me when I ran my first half marathon. She ran it too. And now it's been 7 marathons, a lot of half marathons, a lot of 5Ks. And I love it. And that was about almost 10 years ago. Wow. Or, yeah, 10 years ago that I started running. So
yeah, no, it's cool. And
basically a pro.
Of course. No, that's pretty cool to hear and interesting that, you know, firstly met your roommate through Craigslist, which I don't know how that worked. That's very impressive.
Yeah. And she wasn't a murderer, which is so fortunate.
Very lucky. But also, do you still run with her now?
Oh, she moved to LA. How dare she? Whenever we are together, I see her as much as I can. She's out here a lot and I'll go out and visit her. And when we are together, yes, it's funny. We never ran together. We would leave the apartment together and we would go in opposite directions. Or that was when like we were both so nervous, like, oh, I'm slower than you. You're faster than me. Like, I want to listen to music, but should we be talking? Like, we didn't know how to like be running buddies. So we still joke about it. And we've also never hugged. We've been like best friends for 10 years. We have never hugged. So we just, you know.
Is that because you're a hugger though, right? You must be a hugger. Oh, yeah, you seem like one.
I'm such a hugger. And I think it's because when you're roommates with someone, you see them all the time. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, we lived together for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden one time we saw each other after it had been a while and we like went to hug and we kind of realized like, wait, this feels weird. Anyway, we never actually run together. And to this day, I was out there in December and we woke up really early because I had to get on a flight. We drove down to Santa Monica, got out of the car and literally ran in opposite directions. And we're like, all right, see you in 45 minutes. So
I wonder if it looked to passers-by like you guys had a big argument and you're like, right, I'm going this way, you go that way.
Maybe I'll be here waiting for you when we're done. Or maybe I'll drive away in the car.
Well, but really, yeah, cool.
She is the best running buddy that doesn't run with me.
Very interesting, but I guess it works for you guys. Now, okay, so I mentioned the blog. We've talked about your running journey. You also have this very popular podcast, The Ali on the Run Show. And you're kind of known for being like the fun one, kind of, you know, allowing people to essentially listen in on a conversation, much like they are here. But, you know, I think you take it even one step further than I do kind of. You're quite ballsy when it comes to asking guest questions. I feel like I'd be really intimidated by some of the people you've had on. You know, you've had some really, really big names on there and you just kind of, you know, I guess in England we say banter, but you kind of like just mess around with them. So how do you, that was one question I was wondering personally, how do you kind of allow yourself to get in these situations and not be intimidated? I mean, I know a lot of people meet me and they think I'm going to be this scary person and they're really scared to talk to me. So I can imagine you or feeling that even more with someone, you know, really big, but how do you not let that bother you?
Well, first, I just want to say that I hope that someday on like my gravestone, it says known as the fun one, because that's the best thing I've ever heard. Oh. So thank you for that. I come from a journalism background. Mm. I went to journalism school. I've been a writer and a reporter my whole adult life. And even, I mean, that's what I was doing in high school, was always part of the newspaper. And your job as a reporter is to get the story. It's not about, you know, it's not about asking fluff. It's not about asking what you think people want to hear. For me, it's asking what I want to know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of always been my motivation for my podcast. It's not, what do the listeners want? I care about what the listeners want. I absolutely do. And, you know, without them, the show wouldn't be what it is. But I have guests on the show because they're people I want to hear from. And I'm going to ask them what I want to know. I'm never going to attack them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's never what I'm out to do. But at the same time, if they've made an interesting decision in their career that maybe I don't understand, or maybe I didn't agree with, I want to know, I want to understand it. That's kind of something I'm always striving to do, is understand the decisions people make and why they make them and what the outcomes have been. And yeah, I don't get starstruck. I'm fortunate that in my career, I've been around a lot of big names beyond the running industry. I have interviewed a lot of celebrities, and to me, they're just people. Mm-hmm. They're people with a lot more money than me, which is great. But yeah, I'm not starstruck. To me, they're just people. They're amazing, inspiring people. But they're humans, and I love getting to make people laugh, and I love just getting to know them better. So it's really not something that crosses my mind. Like, oh, should I ask this? The only thing I ever hesitate about asking people is about their specific goals. And that's with the pro runners. I just recorded a podcast with Des Linden recently. Mm-hmm. And I hesitated about whether or not to ask her, Des, do you want to win the Boston Marathon? Because that's what she was training for. And, you know, with stuff like that, I'm never quite sure, but it actually, we ended up talking about it, and it led into a great discussion about why we don't want to put our goals out there, why we're afraid to ask certain questions. Mm, yeah. And, so it actually had a really interesting outcome, but yeah, I just ask what's on my mind. I'm maybe sometimes too honest in every aspect of my life. I'm sure my husband wishes I didn't say a lot of the things I say, and that I did censor myself a little bit more, but that's just not who I am. So.
No, I think it's good that you do that. And actually, to listeners, I would say, you know, if you obviously listen to Running for Real here, if you were going to go for one similar, if you needed another one, I would say Ali is probably the closest to me in her interview style. So make sure you do check it out. And like she said, she's got some big guests on there. So for someone listening who, you know, maybe does get the opportunity occasionally to meet someone who they look up to, or they are interested in, or even just kind of following them online, what have you learned from, you know, speaking to the best of the best and speaking to, like you said, celebrities, other people, and you said they're just regular people. So what would you like to remind people who tend to, you know, think that these people they aspire to be are just like superhuman and everything is just going their way?
Well, I think everyone has a superhuman aspect to them, right? Like, you could look at anyone, and I think it's really common to look at other people. It comes back to the comparison trap, mm-hmm. in my mind, that mm-hmm. it's so easy to look at someone else, whether it's a professional runner, whether it's Ellen DeGeneres, or whether it's someone lining up next to you in the middle of the pack at your next start line. It's really easy to look at someone else and think that they have it all, to think that it's easy for them, to think that they don't struggle. And that's A, never the case. Mm-hmm. And B, you're never going to know more about those struggles unless you ask. You know, no one's looking at Jennifer Lopez thinking, man, she really has it rough. But like, you know, I'm sure she has stuff going on. She doesn't see her kids as much as she wants to, or like everyone makes sacrifices. Everyone has something going on that we don't know about. And yeah, some people do have it a lot easier. That mm-hmm. also is the reality. Mm-hmm. Like Jennifer Lopez's worst day, probably still a lot easier than some of our best days.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it. But I think that it's really easy to only see the good, the easy, the glamorous, the flashy in other people. Social media obviously plays a role in that. You know, I think I've talked about this before, that lately, it kind of seems like everyone posts the good, the beautiful, the good, the beautiful. And then when there's like a let's get real moment, it doesn't always feel authentic to me. Yeah. It feels like, oh, I'm going to write this, but it's because I hope it goes viral. Mm-hmm. I think that that's so common now, the whole like, and that's fine. Like, depending on your motivation, sometimes it feels good. It feels really good to just write that stuff. It sort of, to me, depends on the intention, whatever. But again, it comes down to, in my mind, remembering that we all have something going on.
Yeah,
and sure. And talking about it helps.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of that, like with social media, one way that I kind of know if someone, like you said about that real moment, there's a lot of it kind of coming out that's not so real. If there's like a manufactured, perfected photo of someone struggling, you're like, well, why were you thinking about that in that moment? But if it's kind of like, you know, a picture of something that is kind of related, but it's the best they could do in that situation, then maybe that is a bit more real because it's not, they haven't thought about it. They've just kind of, as an afterthought, thought, okay, what can I do to represent this? So yeah, I definitely agree. And thank you for being real there. And actually on that note, I can hear my daughter screaming upstairs, but on my social media, all people see is lovely, you know, cute photos. And I have taken a few of her crying, but I haven't decided if I want to do that to her because it's kind of mean.
Well, it's also like, that's different. Like, we don't need to constantly be airing our dirty laundry. My gosh, if I posted about every single time I had to run for the bathroom because I was sick, like, no one needs that much information. No.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that then. We can go on to that. So you do have Crohn's disease. So for those who do not know, tell us what it is.
Okay. Crohn's disease is, it's just very sexy. It's very glamorous. It basically is, it's an inflammatory bowel disease. It's related to, if you've heard of ulcerative colitis, I kind of think more people have probably heard colitis in conversation than Crohn's, but it's inflammation in your intestines, in your colon, in your rectum, just in everything you need to digest your food. Mm-hmm. So picture, you know, your intestines are like a long tube, right? Picture them being really swollen to the point that food can't get through and it's very painful and it makes bowel movements very painful. It makes them very urgent. There's just all kinds, it's basically just a mess in there. My stomach is just a mess. And I've had it since I was 7. It hasn't gotten really bad until the last few years, which is tough. For me, the biggest thing is what we call the urgency. It's, I will be sitting here talking to you totally fine. And all of a sudden I have to run for the bathroom. And if it's more than like 5 feet away, something terrible will happen. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of cramping, diarrhea. It's, since this is running for real. So it's bloody diarrhea. It's not like, you know, it's not like you have a quick bout of food poisoning, though. Food poisoning is absolutely brutal. It's kind of like that all the time.
And it comes and goes. Flare ups, right? Yeah.
Yes. So for me, like it's a chronic illness. There's no cure. So I have Crohn's right now, but I'm in remission. Like, thank goodness I'm knocking on all the wood around me. I have been healthy for the last few months, but when I'm in a flare, that's when the disease is active. So that's when there's a lot of inflammation and that's when I'm in pain, super fatigued, really high fevers, night sweats. I get really bad joint pain because it's just, you know, inflammation is everywhere. And so that's what a flare is. It pretty much knocks me off my feet. I can't leave the apartment. I definitely can't work. I definitely can't run. And it's very debilitating and very inconvenient. I never know how long a flare will last, which is the hardest thing for me. I've always said, you know, the pain, the cramping, the bathroom stuff, I can deal with that. I don't enjoy it. I can deal with that. What I struggle with and what sends me into a very dark place is not knowing how long it will last or how much worse it will get.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like an injury, you know, when people get the stress fractures, I always found it hard because even though I never had any bone issues, like a stress fracture or anything, I always found it quite frustrating because those are so easy. Well, not easy, but you could say, all right, you need 6 weeks off and then you can start running again. Whereas like, you know, muscle or tendon, it's like, well, you can try this time and then it might work. But if it bothers you, you have to take some more time off. So it kind of reminds me of that, of what you're saying.
Yeah. Like if someone came to me on day one of a flare, if the first day I felt symptoms, they said, okay, listen, this will last 2 years. You will be very sick for 2 years, but then you will be healthy. I would say, okay, I have to get through 2 years and then I get to be healthy, or this will be 2 weeks. Like if I could plan for it, obviously that will never be able to happen, but it's the uncertainty. I've had flares that have lasted for the better part of 2 years, and I've had ones that have gone away within a couple weeks. So the not knowing is really challenging.
Yeah, I can see that. And you talk about these flares. Do you have any kind of, not so much a warning, but are there things that kind of trigger it and then things that calm it down, or how does that work?
Yeah. So I'm on a medication called Stelara, which is, it's a biologic drug that I give myself an injection at home every 8 weeks. We think it's kind of working. I've been through so many medications, which makes it tough. During this last flare, which was last year, for a few months, I did try changing up my diet a little bit. I cut out gluten, dairy, sugar, and alcohol. And that definitely helped. I felt less bloated. I think that would probably be true for most people anyway. We all have different sensitivities or whatever. I don't have an intolerance to gluten, or I'm not allergic to dairy, but I did generally feel better when I cut those things out. It has been said there is a very strong mind-body connection when it comes to Crohn's. My doctor very strongly believes that stress brings my flares on. And if you look at my timeline, it does make a bit of sense that my biggest flares were when I went away for college, like when I first moved away freshman year, when I studied abroad, when I got my first job out of college, when I got promoted, when I trained for my first marathon, like all during big stressful times, I've had these flares. And so it makes sense. I don't know that it totally brings it on or exacerbates. There's frustratingly little research done on all of this, which drives me absolutely insane. So I just kind of feel like a constant science experiment that I'm constantly getting like a C- in my science experiment, which is very frustrating because I am an A student. So would really like to ace this whole disease, but doesn't seem to be happening just yet.
I think we need to move you to like the mountains of like Utah, where you can like live on berries and stay in a nice, calm environment. And get you out of New York and put you somewhere completely chill and listen to peaceful music.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of merit in that. I'm so happy in the mountains. I'm so relaxed. I need to live in California because.
So why do you live in New York then?
Because my husband owns a company that is based in New York.
Okay, that's kind of important. You'd be a bit more stressed if you didn't have your husband, I think.
I think so too. So the goal is to just get like really super rich. So we have houses everywhere. That's calming to me.
Okay, you can try a house in every state, see which state is the least stressful.
Oh my gosh, I love this idea. Yeah, and I'll blog about it. See, look, now I got content.
Living around the world. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so let's talk about the running aspect of this. Now, you've mentioned, you know, this is pretty debilitating. And when it's really bad, you can't even get out the door to even think about running. Firstly, did you handle that, the mental side of, you know, maybe you're just getting in shape and you get like a flare up happen and you kind of have to say, all right, running, I'll see you later. I've essentially got an injury. How did you handle that mentally, not letting it kind of destroy your confidence again and again?
Not very well. I struggle more in the mental aspect of this disease than I do with the physical. The physical, I've gotten pretty good at dealing with it. It's never easy, but I know on day one of a flare that that's what's coming. My instincts are incredibly good when it comes to the physical signs of this disease. The mental stuff, I will say I got much better with it this past year when I had this flare, but it is hard. It is so hard to have dreams and goals and even just little things like to-do lists and to not be able to accomplish them because your body is physically holding you back. It's one thing to not have the motivation. It's another thing to not have the time. Those are fair. Those are legitimate. But when you have all the motivation and all the drive and you physically cannot do what you want because of your body, that is so, I have such a hard time dealing with that. And it really messes with my psyche a little bit. Like I know that I'm a super strong person. I know that I'm very driven, but when I'm sick, I immediately tend to become very depressed and I don't feel like myself. I literally feel like a shell of a human I'm sad a lot. I cry a lot. I throw pity parties. I don't want to see people. And it's tough. I work from home because I am a freelance writer and podcaster and all those things that have me working from home. So I already work from home. My husband works a lot, so he's not home a ton. And when I'm sick, I'm not going out. Mm. I'm not seeing people. I'm not going on runs. I'm not going to my favorite workout classes. I am by myself all the time. So now it's like, not only am I sick, I'm lonely, but I don't, and my friends are amazing. My friends always offer to come visit, but I don't want them to. So I do it to myself, but I don't want people here when I'm just in the bathroom constantly. That makes me feel even worse. So it's just, I kind of just see the worst in every scenario when I'm sick, which is so not me. Like I live pretty permanently on cloud nine when I'm healthy, but when I'm sick, it's just a dark cloud. Mm-hmm. It's like cloud negative 10. So it's pretty hard. This past go around, by the time I was sort of clawing my way out of the flare, I had a lot of pep talks with myself that were like, you are strong. You got through this. You're okay. It's going to be okay. Just all these little mantras that I have to constantly tell myself and constantly telling myself that it's temporary, that it'll pass. And when I'm in the thick of it, those mantras, I hate them. They do so little. Even when I try, I'm like, all right, today will be a good day. And then you end up in the bathroom and there's nothing you can do about it. And then it's not a good day. And no amount of pep talks or self-care will fix that for me. But it's so easy. Like right now, it's so easy for me to smile and be so grateful and everything's great. And it's tough. It's to go from such a high to such a low. And, yeah. And like you said, with the level of fitness, I mean, that happened to me 2016. I was training for the New York City Marathon and I was most definitely in the best shape of my life. I was finally going to PR the marathon, which I haven't done in forever. And it was going to be my year. I felt so good. And then that flare came and I had to stop training and that sucked. I knew that I was so fit and I had been doing so well. And then that ended up sidelining me for months. Mm-hmm. And I haven't run a marathon since because I don't want to put myself through that. It felt like too much for my body and it's really hard to accept that. I love running long distances, mm-hmm. but I've had to accept that that might not be what's best for my body right now. Maybe someday I'll try again, but right now it's really hard for me to think about running and training for another marathon when my last attempt was felt pretty detrimental. And that might have had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there's not enough research. I don't know how much marathon training actually played into that, but the timelines did line up and that was really hard for me to have to not only be sick, but then to also say, hey, I was working toward this goal and I was working really hard and feeling so confident and so fit. And for the first time in my life, if I flexed really hard, I could see an ab muscle, just one. I could see it and it went away. So it's tough. It's a constant struggle. I feel like whenever I talk to people about this, I want to have some super eloquent takeaway that's like, all you need to do is tell yourself this. I don't have it. I've had this disease for almost 30 years. I'm still working on the takeaway, mm-hmm. but I think reminding myself that this too shall pass, this is temporary, and giving myself credit for being strong. I don't ever give myself credit for being strong. And I've had a lot of really important people that I care about in my life kind of sit me down recently and give me the whole like, girl, you've got to give yourself more credit. Like mm-hmm. you're surviving and you're doing it and you got this. And so it kind of helps sometimes to hear that from people that, you know, care about you.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think a lot of what you just said right there, you know, maybe it's not Crohn's disease, maybe it's something else, but people listening, you know, if you are in a tough patch, you are in, you know, maybe in one of those situations, like Ali is, where, you know, you're training towards something and then suddenly it's ripped away from you and all that hard work kind of goes away. You can take, you know, the snippets of advice she has there, but also realize that, you know, she's going through the same thing, in that, you know, things sometimes don't work out and it is okay to feel sorry for yourself and kind of, you know, just accept that. And like you said with yourself, Ali, you know, you could train for a marathon again, but I'd imagine that now there's kind of almost a bit of a fear with it, that is it going to happen again? And is that going to stress you out, the anxiety around it happening again? So, you know, I think a lot of people are going to resonate with what you just said right there. And being real with you for a second, or being real with us if you can, do you have any frustrations with maybe when you tell people about Crohn's disease or about these flare-ups, people think, well, I have stomach upsets too and I'm able to kind of keep training. Do you ever have to deal with that? And what would you like to say to anyone who maybe thinks that?
That stuff honestly doesn't bother me. It's funny, every now and then I have a lot of friends with Crohn's, you know, not necessarily in real life, but I've made a lot of connections with people. And every now and then someone will post one of those articles that's like 20 things not to say to someone with Crohn's, and I'll click and read. And it's like all these things that really offend people who have a digestive disorder, and it all rolls off my back. Mm-hmm. Like,
okay,
the way I see it is, yes, I have Crohn's disease and yes, it sucks. But for some people, having a really bad stomach ache is the worst pain they've ever felt. So, you know, I'm not going to compare and say like, oh, well, I have it worse than you. Mm. You know, I do know like one person who also has Crohn's disease and runs like ultra marathons with it, and will be like, I'm in such a bad flare, just ran a 50-mile ultra. And I'm like, what the hell kind of flare is bad for you that you're still running an ultra? And like, I haven't left my house in 2 weeks. So that's not, you know, and that's not like a judgment on her. It's more me being like, man, like, how is that happening? But I've also learned when not to push my limits. So I do a pretty good job now of not comparing my flares to other people, not comparing what I'm able to do during flares. It's very easy to say like, all right, well, she ran 50 miles, so I should at least go try to run 3. No, like I at this point do know whether attempting a workout will actually serve me mentally, or if it's just, you know, if I'm going to go try to run 3 miles and I'm going to make 10 bathroom stops, which has happened, that's, I'm probably not going to enjoy that. I'm probably going to end up being more frustrated, more upset. So it kind of depends on my mental state on that given day, but I don't mind people saying like, oh, I get stomach aches too. Like, that's their level of pain. And for all I know, like, their stomach aches might be really, really bad. Mm-hmm. So nothing that people say, nothing offends me. I will say I hate poop jokes. I have a lot of friends with Crohn's who really find a lot of solace in poop jokes. I'm not offended by them. I just don't think they're funny. Maybe they're too real. So I never, like, to this day, I've never used the poop emoji on the phone. Mm-hmm. Like, I talk about it enough in a very real way that like, they don't bother me, but I'm never like, oh, ha, ha, great Crohn's joke. I'm just like, not for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can't say I've ever used it either, but I, again, haven't dealt with it, so I don't know. But I know that, you know, I have had stomach issues. All runners listening have had stomach issues, you know, not to the level you have, but, you know, there's obviously with your kind of situation, it's so extreme that you're not going to be able to say, you know, if you have a stomach upset, try this, it will help. But is there anything you would say to people listening, you know, on a very minor scale, if they are dealing with stomach discomforts that you have learned, maybe a newer runner, that you would like to pass along before we move on?
Yes. Do what works for you. And it's not going to happen right away. Just because everyone else is eating toast with peanut butter and a banana before they go for a run does not mean that's what you should eat. Mm-hmm. I have gone for 3-hour runs on a completely empty stomach because that's what has worked for me. I don't do that every time. Well, I don't go for 3-hour runs anymore, but if I'm running a half marathon, I don't even drink water unless it's super hot, because I cannot have anything sloshing around my stomach. Unless it's longer than a half marathon, I generally don't even take water. Wow. I'm not recommending this. I am saying this is what works for me. And yeah, I know that because I've tested it for years. So yeah, if taking a gel during a long run is great for you because it goes right down, do that. If eating a scoop of frosting before you go for a run works for you, eat the frosting. I think it's really easy to read the magazines, read the blogs, look on Instagram and see that it often seems like everyone else is eating or doing the same things. Mm-hmm. Like there was a phase, man, during the blogging boom where everyone was eating oatmeal mm-hmm. and everyone before their Saturday long run was waking up at 5 a.m. having a piece of toast with peanut butter and banana. Guess what? I decided to do that once. Guess what I did? I threw up. Like I literally threw up. It was mm-hmm. a 16-mile run. I will always remember it. Everyone also said that vanilla goo tasted like frosting. So I bought a vanilla goo and halfway through a run, I was like, this is going to, I like psyched myself up for it. I was like, I get to have my frosting now. I was so jazzed, threw up. I remember exactly where I was in Central Park. I was like, because I was right by one of my favorite bathrooms and I stood there and I ate it and I threw up.
Oh no.
So I don't know if they're eating different frosting than me or whatever. I would just say in terms of figuring out your stomach and your nutrition, it is so personal. Totally fine to get ideas from other people, try them out and try them more than once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it does take your body a little while to figure things out, to adjust, to decide, do I like this?
When you might have had something the night before that could have, you know, upset your stomach and it isn't right. Actually the food you just ate. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, test it out. Don't worry about what other people are doing and know that pretty much all runners at some point will encounter some type of digestive distress.
Yes.
Running is high impact. Running gets things moving around. Mm-hmm. And I do think, I don't know if normal is like the right word, but I think that yeah, it might happen from time to time. If it hasn't happened yet, get excited. It's coming.
Yep. And I can definitely agree with that. I do, in fact, have one experience where I walk ran home crying because I was so embarrassed. So, yep, I've been there too.
Yeah.
Although my mind is still stuck on the thing you said about eating frosting before running. I might give that a try.
I don't know where that came from, but
scoop of a, have you like tub to take with you on runs? That would be good.
I went through a phase where I was doing toast with Nutella. Hmm. So
I could see that being good. Definitely a good
I don't
choice.
Know if it digested the best, but it got me excited to wake up. So
yeah, well, it works. All right. I want to ask a few, well, actually let's ask a bit more. There's one other question I wanted you to kind of talk about just while we're on the topic of digestion and just like, you know, our bodies and trusting who we are. We talked about comparison already. Now, you've never really been someone to kind of give in to this pressure of I need to look like other people or maybe you have dealt with it but not given into it. You know, I need to be strong. You've always, I need to be skinny. You've always kind of focused on I want to be strong. I want to be me. What would be your advice to people listening on that?
Yeah. It actually is similar to what I was just saying about nutrition, which is that bodies are so personal. And it makes me happy that you just phrased that question the way you did, because I look at my history with my body and I've had a not totally healthy relationship with my body, mm-hmm. but I was never comparing it to other people's. I never said, I want to look like this celebrity. I want to look like this person I know. It was always me comparing my own body to ways it had been yes. before. Mm-hmm. So that also Crohn's disease plays into that. When I'm sick, I lose a ton of weight. And I mean, that's when I have abs. That's when I can see that one ab is when I'm sick. So then it's tough when I get healthy again and I'm able to start eating, digesting, working out, and I gain weight as a result. In theory, it's great that I'm gaining weight because it means I'm healthy. But at the same time, it's like, oh, my clothes were looking so good for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that is obviously not a healthy way to think because I looked good because I was sick, not because I was working hard. So for me, I've had a long history of comparing my body to how it's looked at other times. Like, oh, the last time I wore this shirt, it looked better, different, mm-hmm. whatever. So it's been that. At the same time, I have always known that my body is a tool. That's something you're taught as a dancer right away. Your body's your instrument. You cannot dance without it. You cannot perform without it. And it's the same for runners. You can't run unless you're taking care of your body, unless you're nourishing it, unless you're letting it recover. And so I have always known that my body is the reason I am allowed to do cool things. I love hiking. I love going for walks with my dog. I can't do that unless I'm taking care of my body. So I have always loved being strong. I have, you know, I have had issues in the past. The biggest thing for me is being able to live the life I want to live and feeling strong enough to do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that does mean training for a marathon. Other times it means hauling in 6 bags of groceries from my car because no way am I making 2 trips. So I love being able to like go for walks with my husband and my dog, and then she'll get excited and pick up the pace and we'll have to like run with her. Mm-hmm. She knew I was talking about her. So I don't have it all figured out, but I will say that the best lesson for me has just been getting older.
Yeah.
I turned 30 and I'm 32. I'm about to turn 33. And it was so 3 years ago, I literally turned 30 and I said, I am done. I am done stressing over my body. I am done beating myself up about how it looks or how much I can pinch around my waist or anything that's not positive, that's not serving me well. It's fine if I want to, you know, tone up or if I feel that I need to maybe lose a few pounds, though I don't know when the last time I weighed myself was. That's a terrible example, but it's fine to want to be your best, whatever that is, as long as I think you're talking to yourself and I'm talking to myself in a positive, uplifting way that says, hey, I want to be fit because.
Yeah.
Whatever that motivation is, that could be running a marathon. It could be fitting into a pair of pants. Either one is fine. I think that there's like it's kind of like trendy right now to sort of like bash losing weight. Like, you don't have to lose weight. You're perfect the way you are. I'm kind of like, if you would feel better or healthier losing weight, go for it. Do it in a healthy way. But my general outlook is like to each their own.
Yeah.
Whatever, like you do you.
Yeah.
Just at the end of the day, do it in a way that's positive and that is so you can be strong for yourself, for your family, for your job, whatever it is. I think I just got way, way off topic.
No, but I think that was good. And I think that was good for people to hear and interesting to hear your take as well. And that means that I'm only about 5 months away from becoming wise. So I'm pretty excited about waking up on that day and suddenly being wise like you.
Anytime I feel like a lot of my friends right now are younger than me and they're all like 28, 29. And they're like, oh my God, I'm turning 30. I'm like, it's the best thing that'll ever happen. Like I'm only a couple years in. I think the 30s are the best. Mm. I feel so much more, and I don't know what it was. I literally like turned 30, game changer. I feel more secure with myself. I feel more comfortable. I'm more assertive making decisions. Mm. I just feel like I love it.
That's good.
Love my 30s.
That's good. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. And hopefully I feel the same way when I get there.
You will. You're going to love it.
I hope so. I got some funny questions for you. And when I was looking into, you know, your story and about you, there was a few things that kind of stood out to me that I wanted to ask you about. These are not running related, but, you know, in both of our styles of kind of asking what we want to know. First thing, Stonehenge scares you. Now,
listen,
being British, that's a little bit offensive to me. So I'd like you to explain yourself.
Oh no, I don't want it to be offensive. Okay. I've never been to Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. It freaks me out. Like, I don't know. I feel like cults go there at night and like dance around it. It's very unnatural. There's just something about Stonehenge that does not sit right with me. If you want to take me there on a field trip, I would be happy. We can do a live show. We can see if I'm scared in person. I'm sure it's lovely. So I mean no offense, but I don't know. At some point in my life, I decided like Stonehenge is something that's scary to me. Yeah. And now it's like paralyzing. So
it is. I mean, obviously, as we know, there is no real explanation for it. So yeah, I could see
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Where did it come from? Mm-hmm. Why is it there? What is like, what's buried underneath it?
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll never know. If they haven't kind of tried to figure out yet, I don't know if we ever will. Okay.
I don't want to know.
Well, thank you for explaining your irrational fear around one of my beloved landmarks.
I'm so sorry. Okay. I'm sure it is beautiful in real life.
And then the other one was, this is a good one. You like Celine Dion. So I would like to know what your favorite song from Celine Dion is.
Okay. Well, number one is The Power of Love. Which most people think it's called Because I'm Your Lady. It's not called that. It's called The Power of Love. That was our first dance song at our wedding. Mm-hmm. So very near and dear to my heart, except that we didn't actually dance. I just stood there singing to Brian the entire time because I was so excited. That was what got me to cry. I didn't cry walking down the aisle, didn't cry saying our vows, but when Celine Dion came on, I was a puddle. Okay, so I love The Power of Love is a great song. I love That's the Way It Is.
Oh, that really gets... That's my favorite one. Yeah,
that's like, you rock out to that one.
Yes.
River Deep Mountain High, very underrated.
Yes.
Very good song. Interestingly, I don't like Because You Loved Me or My Heart Will Go On. Just a little overdone for my liking. Yeah. Lovely songs, but...
I have to disagree with you on that one.
And then the full 7.5 minute version of It's All Coming Back to Me Now is just,
yep.
A lot of people don't even know that there's a 7 minute version because they cut it down on the radio, but there's like three verses.
Have you watched the video of that?
Oh, of course.
Like,
I've watched.
Like devastating. I like cry when
I
watch it.
Yeah. And I've been fortunate. I have seen Celine Dion perform. I did get to meet her once.
Wow.
Which,
that is a celebrity.
Yeah.
Were you starstruck then?
I was excited. I wasn't starstruck. Wow. I wanted to get to talk to her more, but I didn't get like enough one-on-one time because it was a little hectic, but, I wasn't starstruck, but I was excited.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your love of Celine Dion, and, you definitely did with the name dropping of the songs there. So we know you are true to that.
Oh yeah. Super fan. I'm a super fan. For sure.
Okay. All right. We are just going to take a moment to thank our sponsors and we will be back with the Running for Real 4. I've been talking about Body Health Perfect Amino for years now, and now I'm getting back into running again. Guess what the first product on my list to remember to start taking was? Yep, Body Health. All you need to do is take 5 to 10 Perfect Amino tablets. I like the tablets, but you could also use the XP powder at some point in your day, leaving a little time after you eat to make sure your body absorbs it correctly, and then it will get to work helping your body repair between training runs. Many of us have a goal of getting everything we need from our food, but let's be realistic. With our hectic lives, we barely have time to squeeze in a run, so making sure you stay on top of eating foods can be even more of a challenge. Perfect Amino contains the 8 essential amino acids the body needs to support and maintain all its systems working as it should. And the essential acids, amino acids, are in the exact proportion needed for the body. There's a reason they have so many positive reviews on their website. I love them, especially when I have a big race in mind, and the idea of not being able to do it because I was under-recovered or even worse, injured, terrifies me. Hopefully you enjoy them too, and you can get 10% off at bodyhealth.com using coupon code TINA10. All right, Ali, just 4 more questions for you, starting with a unique nutrition tip. Now, this one's going to be interesting.
Okay, so I should never give any nutrition advice because,
you told us
like
to
I
eat
said, I tell people to eat frosting and I don't drink or eat anything when I run for 2 hours.
Yep.
So I'm not going to give advice. I will say something I've been eating nonstop lately, which is the superhero muffins from Shalane Flanagan and Elise Kopecky's Run Fast, Eat Slow cookbook. I know that everyone was like making those 2 years ago when the cookbook first came out. I am a little late to this game.
They're still good.
I just started making them. I think I ate 12 in 4 days last week, which if you do the math means I was eating 3 a day, which is accurate. So yeah, they're really, really good. They have carrots and zucchini in them. I add chocolate chips to mine because, you know, obviously.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm very into the Run Fast, Eat Slow muffins. I eat them before I work out in the morning, like an hour before, and I haven't had any issues.
Yeah,
so
they're really good. Yep.
Yeah,
and if you haven't got that cookbook, guys, go get it. And have you tried the sweet potato cookies? I have to say, for me, they edge out the superior muffins.
Oh, no, I haven't tried them.
Try those. I would say they are even better than the muffins. But yes, thank you so much for sharing that one. And I definitely agree with you for those. They are very, very good. I have some actually made in the pantry right now. So definitely. All right. What about a running for real moment for you? You've given us quite a few in this one, but any more you'd like to share?
Mine are all the reality of being a runner and being a runner with Crohn's disease means bathroom stops happen and not always conveniently, not ever conveniently. I know where every single bathroom in Central Park is, but sadly, I also know where every really big bush, really big tree, or slightly hidden dumpster is. So I'll leave it at that, but I will say that bathroom stops don't always make it to a bathroom, and it is unfortunate and it sucks. But yeah, that's my life.
Yeah.
That's actually what's more likely to go on my tombstone. So,
well, thank you for being real with us for that one. I'm sure you've made a lot of people feel a lot more comfortable. Okay, what about a high moment for you?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I have a bunch that come to mind. The first and most obvious one is my half marathon PR, which I ran back in 2011. So it needs a refresher, but I ran that race fresh off the breakup I mentioned earlier, actually. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, it was a bad breakup. It was really hard for me. And so going down to DC, it was before it was the rock and roll race. It was like called the National Half or something. And I went down there. I wanted to run a sub 2 because that's kind of where I had been at. I was still pretty new to running. And my race before that, I had run it 2 hours and 3 seconds. Mm. So I was like, I need to go sub 2. And I ran a 1:44. Wow. So I beat my goal by
just a little bit
more than 15 minutes. I ran happy the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I felt so strong. I ran that race and was like, I'm back. Like I'm me again after, you know, breakups are tough. I kind of felt like I'd had my heart ripped out and I was sad and I didn't handle it well. I was also quite a bit younger, but to go down there and run that race, it felt so victorious. And I also like, I met so many great people down there and that was a great running high for me. Mm-hmm. And then I can't not mention the New York City Marathon, which is just my favorite race. It's my hometown race. And every single time I've run it has been so special. So every New York City Marathon experience, I've actually been sick and having a Crohn's flare 2 of the times I've run it. The other time I was healthy, and each time has been amazing and special. And there's just nothing like the New York City Marathon.
That says a lot about it. If you were able to say that you loved it that much, despite having a flare during it twice. So
Time I ran it, I think was, I forget what year, it was 2013, and I made 3 bathroom stops in the first half, and I was just smiling, and then I felt good for the second half, so I negative split the New York City Marathon, which I don't think many people do, because the second half is a little bit tougher, so, and I actually ran a pretty respectable time, considering I made 3 bathroom stops, a respectable time for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love that race so much. And any way you can be a part of it is great. If you're not running it, volunteering, spectating, near the finish line, it's all just, it's amazing.
Cool. Well, I'm sure plenty of people agree with you, and hopefully I will someday too.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, we were hoping this year. Ali was trying to convince me to see if I can do the marathon this year in New York, but I don't know, that might be pushing it a bit, but we will see.
I have a couple months to convince you. I'm officially starting this campaign.
Okay. We'll see how successful you are at that. And finally, Ali, what do you tell yourself when you're standing on the start line of a race?
This is awesome.
Good.
Every single time. I just stand there and I look around and I usually have some music playing and I feel so grateful to be there. I've missed being on a lot of start lines because my body hasn't let me be there. So every single time, whether it's a 5K I'm running for fun or it's that New York City Marathon, I just stand there and I just bask in it. Mm-hmm. And I always just think, this is awesome.
Oh, I love that. That's really cool. And then will you send us a photo of you in a power pose, something you would do on the start line to build confidence?
Oh yeah. It's going to be jazz hands and...
Love it.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Make sure you guys check out the show notes for that photo. You know, you'll get to kind of enjoy Ali's different take on this power pose. So Ali, thank you so much for this. This has been a lot of fun. Great to learn more about you. And we really appreciate all that you do. Where can people find out more about you?
I am Ali on the Run 1, because Ali on the Run was taken. I'm Ali on the Run 1 on Instagram and Twitter. Ali on the Run has a Facebook page that you can follow. And of course, my podcast is The Ali on the Run Show, which I'm sure you're listening to Tina's. So if you click on Related in iTunes, you'll usually find me in there.
Yep, I'm sure it is. And have you ever met Ali on the Run, the original?
No.
She'll come up to you someday.
I hope so. The woman who has the Ali on the Run Instagram, because I joined Instagram pretty late. I believe it's a mom, and I think her account might be private, but I also know she gets tagged a lot as me. I see people tagging Ali on the Run. I'm like, that's not me. So I hope that we can be friends someday.
Yeah. You're not going to be mad at her and be like, hey, you stole my name.
No, no. She had it first.
Yeah, I actually, well, I'm Tina Muir 88 on Instagram as well. And that still annoys me, especially because the Tina Muir, they don't even use it. It's just one of those dead ones, which I just want to take it back. But anyway, thank you so much, Ali. This has been so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me. I love it.
If you haven't checked out Ali's podcast, Ali on the Run Show, as I mentioned, hers is probably the most similar one to this one. So if you're looking for one to start with, she did have a guest on a few weeks ago that you might know quite well. Hint, hint. Yes, that was me. And hopefully you will enjoy that one. I will have links to that along with everything else we talked about in the show notes at tinamuir.com/episode58. I hope you'll consider checking out the Running For Real podcast series. Today I told you about the Coming Back From Injury series, but remember there's also a beginners, marathon, nutrition, pregnancy and postpartum, and mental training. So next week we're going to be talking to Liz and Martin Yelling. Liz is a double Olympian who was once Paula Radcliffe's training partner and during her peak years. And Martin, many of you may know as the host of Marathon Talk. So be ready for a fun chat next week. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Running For Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.